What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, and Total Beverage in Thornton and Westminster. I'm your host, as always, with the most, JJ Jerez, fresh off the golf course, too. Love the fact that I'm golfing in November. With me, of course, Arif Dean, and we got Patrick Stedman on the controls. All three of us were at the game last night, Arif, and what a game it was, huh?
Yeah, the Avalanche that everybody around here knows and loves seem to be back. I kind of feel good about the fact that we've spent the last month trying to calm everybody down to not go crazy with the crappy start this team had, because that could go one of two ways. It could continue into December and we look like idiots, or the Avalanche could turn around and we look smart. I mean, either way, what we said had no effect on how things turned out. But given the two games the Avalanche just had, it looks like they're back. They've got their identity back. They're playing well. They're controlling the puck. And they're scoring a hell of a lot of goals.
Yeah, the Avs we know and love are back, just like the podcast you know and love is back, right? The last podcast recording we did was actually live in studio, and it was a little different for us. It was a little uncomfortable, but we made the best of it. But, man, we really called it. We knew that the Avs were going to come out and lay a beat down to the Sharks. But, 13 goals in two games, and they're kind of just scoring by committee here, right?
Yeah, a lot of goals coming from everywhere. The depth guys like Helm and O'Connor are pitching in. JT Compher is pitching in. Alex Newhook got his first career goal. You're getting the goals from pretty much everywhere on these forward lines. You'd like to still see more from Tyson Jost, but I mean, that's kind of every year with him, with the offensive capabilities. Nazem Kadri's continuing his point streak. Rantanen and Burakovsky, the top guys are scoring. It's coming from everywhere right now, and it's just great to see.
Right. I mean, O'Connor's goal was huge. Newhook's goal was huge. And then the two even shorthanded goals. I mean, I think that's a big signal of kind of the direction of where this penalty kill has gone in the last year, right? Now that they have three shorthanded goals, where last year they only had one all season. So, I mean, I loved seeing Darren Helm. I know it was a bit dramatic calling him the special teams MVP, but he's obviously contributed a lot there. So I love seeing that. And then with the goal scoring, you're seeing a lot from the defense too.
Yeah, the defense has been pitching in a lot. Real quick on Darren Helm, that duo with him and O'Connor just kind of seems to work really well. You got the older veteran guy mm-hmm. that can kind of show him the ropes, and then you got the young energy guy in Logan O'Connor, where whichever line you stick him on, he's just there like, I just want to bring all the energy, and him and Helm just kind of, they work really well together. But on the blue line, the defense is scoring a lot. We saw Sam Girard have a hell of a game. One goal, three assists. Obviously, it was an empty netter. And even Jared Bednar said after the game he said, what did he have? 1-3? Well, he also missed two glorious opportunities. He could have easily had 5 or 6 points. Devon Taves has been back. You know, he didn't do much in the Columbus game, his first game back. But these last two games, he's got a goal in each one. And both of them just friggin' lasers, bombs from the blue line. You know, old-fashioned defense, defensive style goals. Kel McCarr is racking up some points. It seems to be coming from everywhere. The defense yesterday actually was excellent offensively and defensively, for that matter, outside of the first 7 or 8 minutes of the game. Yesterday, the Avalanche had 31 shots on San Jose. The defense amounted to 16 of those shots, more than half of them. So it was just great to see that that blue line is finally coming together. And that was, you know, obviously without Bowen Byram.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think there's a visible effort by the Avalanche here to really get pucks to the point. I mean, I saw that last night too. After the first period, the defense had a majority of the shots, and you know, the Avalanche took a while to get shots going in that first period. We'll get into that in a second, but back to the defense shooting shots from the point. You know, I think I can count three situations that I vividly remember where Mikko Rantanen, he would swing the puck out, right? And he'd be right at the top of the circle. And in my head, I'm like, oh, what a great shot he has right there. And instead, he would kick it back out to the defense or kick it across ice. And so I think they're not settling for the easy shots, and they're looking to get those shots from the point with the traffic through. I mean, that's an obvious key to what they're trying to do right now.
Yeah, and when you got guys that are going to play that, you know, down low game like Kadri, Landeskog, Compher, Helm, O'Connor, that are going to, you know, pick up the dirty goals, it helps to take those shots from the point, generate the traffic, and, you know, get the rebounds. I know two guys on the Avalanche that love to score the pretty goals and the pretty shots. One of them is Andrei Burakovsky. The other one is now Alex Newhook, since he's back. So other than that, all these other guys, they're, I mean, not that Burakovsky and Newhook aren't willing, but a lot of these other guys, they score their goals down low. They're itching to get there and, you know, score those dirty goals in the crease and, you know, rack up those rebounds. So I think it's a good way to go. As long as you're not shooting it into the shins and it's going the other way, the old, you know, Tyson Berry special, it's going to work out well. And the good part about what the Avs are doing is not only are they getting the puck to the point, they're doing it in a way where they're setting up the defense to have a clear look at the net. There isn't, you know, two or three guys ready to block the shot from the opposition. It's the Avalanche that are in front of the shot, generating the traffic in front of the goalie, and they're obviously able to move just as the puck is coming through. So they're doing a really good job of kind of just like dealing these changeups to the defense every single game where the opposition has no idea what's coming.
Yeah, and everybody saw the slow start, right? We discussed how it took the Avalanche, what, about 10 minutes to actually get their first recorded shot on goal.
Yep.
They had they were down 8-0 at one point. And during that time, you know, I even looked at you at one point and saying, man, I wonder who actually leads the league right now in shot attempts blocked, because the Avalanche had such a tough time getting them through. They were throwing them right in the shin guards, and that was right in the time that everything seemed frustrating. I thought it was strange that the Avalanche were able to just kind of turn it around. All it took was a power play, and they were able to score, right? And then suddenly the Avs played a completely different game. Usually I feel like that transition happens during an intermission at times. So
yeah,
for the fact that the Avalanche came out slow, and you're like, oh gosh, this is going to be another one of those, oh, I didn't like our start from Jared Bednar, ended up turning it around in that period. I thought that was pretty good stuff. I mean, to be, you know, it's just a good sign of a strong team right there.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember last year, we talked a lot about how the Avalanche would have one good period a game or two good periods a game and then kind of just mail it in for another one. I mean, with all due respect, there's no issue with them doing that last year because, you know, by the time you get to the third period, they're up 5-0, out shooting another team 40-12. Like, it's fine. But one of the biggest issues that we've seen with Jared Bednar as a coach is the in-game coaching, is being able to adjust your game. We've seen him kind of lose coaching battles to Pete DeBoer actually twice when he was with San Jose and then again when he was with Vegas. We saw him in that Dallas series where he's just unable to adjust to kind of defeat the opposition. So for them to be able to switch something midway through a period to make it work is nice to see. So like you said, you know, that's the kind of game where you kind of like throughout the game, even early in the game when the Sharks scored early and, you know, things didn't kind of look too well, I looked at you and I said, I'm not worried about this game yet or at all. Because in my mind, I'm like, all right, we'll get it to the intermission, at least just stay down a goal, maybe two goals, and then come out in the second period and do that Avalanche thing where you outshoot them 20-5 and you outscore them 4-0 or something like that. But no, they got the first one was a power play goal from Taves. They followed it up 3 minutes later with a goal from Nazem Kadri. They took a 2-1 lead into the second period. And then from there, they just kind of took off, you know, adding another two goals and the game was over. Like it was right away. As soon as Kadri made it 2-1, and the Avalanche ended the period the way they did, which was a 12-10 shot advantage after, you know, surrendering the first 8 shots of the game, you just knew, or sorry, they were trailing 12-10 in shots, but they had let in the first 8 shots of the game. You just knew that they were going to win that game from that moment on.
Yeah, I mean, the Couture goal, the one that put San Jose up 1-0, I mean, it was kind of such a fluky goal, right? I mean, it was skilled. It was a really impressive goal, but not many people are scoring from the hash marks right up against the wall there like that. So you saw that and you're like, all right, well, you know, who knows if the offense for the Sharks is really going to be that good. And then the Avs suddenly had two posts hit, right? There was a moment where Aiden Hill had two saves and the Avs had hit two posts. So that's when you're kind of feeling like, all right.
They had two shots and two pings. I remember that.
Things are going to be okay. Things are going to be okay here. But yeah, it was a great game. And, you know, I think the star of the game ended up being Sam Girard, and definitely was hands down his best game of the season so far.
Yeah, and he's up to 9 points in 10 games now. And what do you know? All it took was for him to have two or three straight games in a row where he's offensively in the game and engaged. And suddenly the rough start he had to his season is no more. He's back to his usual nearly a point per game pace from the blue line, which is exactly what you want to see. I personally, I know we've kind of beat this horse friggin' into the ground over the last two or three episodes, but I personally think it's because Devon Taves is back and Devon Taves is able to do what he does defensively. It's giving Makar, Girard, and all these guys to kind of slot back into a comfortable spot of what they do best. And it's kind of given the Avalanche just this defensive core that's now rounded out. Even though Bowen Byram was out that second game for these last two games, the one against San Jose, Devon Taves still kind of gave everybody the ability to play the game that they want to play. And Sam Girard's done exactly that. He's got 7 points in his last 3 games after only 2 in his first 7.
We discussed it when we were live on the hockey show yesterday. Let's say it again just in case nobody heard it. But, you know, we heard from Jared Bednar after the game against Vancouver how he was kind of making people jump into practice even though they were a little bit banged up and otherwise probably wouldn't have been practicing. And we know that that's a fact for a couple players, not just one. I think Sam Girard fits under that bill. And against San Jose, I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I could be totally off on this, but I saw him do his little spin move, right? The tornado.
Finally.
And I thought to myself, that's something we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
So I think maybe he's, you know, he'd faced a couple vicious hits early on in the season. So now maybe he's physically starting to feel a little better and we're seeing it on the score sheet.
Exactly. I mean, he kind of, those hits he took early that, you know, that waved off icing cold where he went hard into the boards and then the Stamkos hit. Luckily, no concussion issues, but the dude is sore. Like,
which is amazing for his size, right? I mean, amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%. But luckily, no concussion issues. So it's just a matter of muscle and muscle pain and soreness and bone bruises and all these things that you just need a little bit of time to kind of recover from. And, you know, that might be the deal. We saw he had a few maintenance days in practice. Sam Girard wasn't skating, but then it would come to the time for the game and Girard's in the game. So it looks like the Avalanche were giving him that time to kind of recover from whatever the heck has been ailing him from the early part of the season. And obviously we're seeing him kind of regain that confidence, doing the things that he does and just being that electrifying defenseman that he's known to be. So, you know, it's just good to see that because we saw Cale Makar have two or three of his best games lately. We saw, you know, obviously Bowen Byram before he went down continue to be the guy that he's been all season, just consistently strong. Devon Taves hasn't skipped a beat. Ryan Murray, you know, he sat a game and then he came in and played on that second pair with Girard and was excellent. And then Johnson and Johnson on the third pair, you barely notice them. And that's because they're out there to do one thing and it's to make sure the other team doesn't score. And, you know, they're doing a good job at that too. You suddenly have this blue line that is just loaded with depth. You're no longer dealing with guys like Patrick Nemeth where you're, you know, late in the season last year. Before that, you had to play a whole bunch of games with Kyle Burrows and guys like that where you're just like, man, the top of the defense is great. The bottom, not so much. You no longer have to deal with that. It looks like the Avalanche just have it figured out top to bottom. As long as Curtis McDermott doesn't dress, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Cale Makar, you mentioned him there. I think he's one of those guys on that list that might be a little bit banged up and probably, you know, would have missed practice if they didn't need him to be out there. You know, Tyson Jost kind of comes to mind as one of those guys. He was kind of in and out of practices there for a bit for maintenance days and, you know, probably Andrei Burakovsky. So it seems like all these guys are starting to heal up, which is nice. And it's tough because they're still battling the one guy per game is going down, right? And the most recently was JT Compher. So JT Compher leaving the game, we're not really sure. I mean, it seemed like Jared Bednar wasn't even really sure what happened because he mentioned that he tried to throw him out there for another shift. He didn't even know.
Yeah, he had no idea that he was injured. He said, I told him, I threw him out there because, you know, obviously Compher being a hockey player didn't really say anything. He said, I threw him out there. He twirled and just came back on the bench. So whatever the heck it was that was ailing him, obviously it was, you know, not noticeable enough for anybody to realize it. He didn't come hunched, you know, to the bench or limping to the bench or anything. Do you remember if they said it was upper body or lower body? I don't remember.
They said it was upper body, which was strange because I think we all suspected it was lower.
Yeah, and I believe you said you saw him post-game kind of limping a little bit, so...
Right.
Yeah, so something is up there with JT, who knows, but... Bednar, the way he talked about it was kind of like he's going to get reevaluated and we'll find out if it's a couple days or a long time. Like nobody has any clue what it is. I kind of am expecting the worst with this one. But we'll see. Practice on Monday when you guys are listening to this. The Avalanche will probably have practice by now and I'll have probably tweeted out some updates. But it's just unreal. It's every game. It's one guy. And it's, you know, it's not the bottom of the lineup. No disrespect to, you know, Megna, Sherwood, even Helm or Tyson Jost or any of those guys. It's always the guys that play 20, 25 minutes a night. Go figure. Those are the guys that are on the ice more. You're more prone to get hurt. But man, the luck they've had this year.
Yeah, I mean, Helm, you know, that was kind of the knock on him coming from Detroit is he had a hard time staying healthy in years past, right? And he still seems to be kind of one of the Iron Men. So seeing a guy like JT Compher, who tends to be a guy that's in the lineup on a regular basis, seeing him go down, now it's just, it's tough to see. But back to Logan O'Connor, he kind of filled in there in that absence and, you know, again, brought the energy and just shows how high they think his potential is if they're putting him with Rantanen and Landy there.
He's got 3 goals and 3 assists, and the Avalanche loved him so much, they brought him up there. Instead of bringing up a centerman like Tyson Jost, they brought up Logan O'Connor and said, Mikko, you're going to be a center now. All right, sure. You're playing with Landeskog and Logan O'Connor. It's, I can't say enough good things about that dude. Like, we could literally do a podcast every week for an hour just talking about, assuming they're both healthy, just talking about all the good things that Bowen Byram and Logan O'Connor did this past week. Like, it could be a weekly show. We don't get paid enough to do that, obviously. But, like, it's literally something you could do because these guys are developing in front of our eyes into just quality players. Bowen Byram into an all-star defenseman and Logan O'Connor into one of those guys that, you know, I talked about Alex Tuck last week, and who the hell says Logan O'Connor can't be that? This physical, rugged forward that plays on the wing, that could play on the PK, on the power play, and give you 40, 50 points a year. Like, I know it's crazy to say that for someone who's got like 10 career points or something, but who says he can't develop into that?
Right. I mean, he's got great skill. He knows how to do the physical side of the job now that he's in the NHL, and he kind of had to adapt to that style. But he's also got the high hockey IQ. Like, I honestly think in Logan O'Connor's future, he's going to be on a coaching staff somewhere once his playing days are all said and done, because he just strikes me as that kind of person.
You remember his post-game, or was it practice? I forget, when he spoke to the media. Were you there?
He spoke in a post-game just after the Vancouver game the other night.
Okay, that's what it was. Yeah, so the post-game against Vancouver. Any question we asked him, he was like a typewriter, just like blurting out his answer without even having to think. Some of it was hockey cliche, but he's just got so many thoughts, so many things to say. It's kind of just an information dump. Like, how did the game go? Boom, 300 words in like 20 seconds of how the game went. Like, he doesn't even need to think about it. It kind of reminds me of Jared Bednar, because Jared does that too.
Yep.
Jared, yesterday, his media availability was about 20 minutes long. And he only took about 6 or 7 questions, because somebody would ask him, like, is the sky blue? And he would talk for 3 hours about how the power play, how it was executing. Like, it's just unreal the way that that guy talks. He loves to talk about hockey and he nerds out over, and Logan O'Connor kind of has a similar feel. So you just know he's got a future in that. But right now in the present, he's developing in front of our very own eyes into one of those fan favorites that's just going to be around for a while. And I'm going to keep my eye on the crowd, because I expect to see more 25s rolling around the concourse of Ball Arena and sitting in the stands here in the coming months.
Yeah, I'm with that. So last thing I wanted to get to about the San Jose game is the power play goes 1 for 5. The San Jose Sharks has a really strong penalty kill. I think they were second in the league going into that game, but that one power play goal that they scored, I think Jared Bednar called it ugly, but I mean, it was such a pivotal goal. And like I said earlier, really turned that first period around for the team. So, you know, props to them for getting that power play goal done against a strong PK unit.
Yep, and it was Devon Taves with a hell of a shot from the point. He did the same thing against the Vancouver Canucks. Granted, that one was even strength. And, you know, you want to see him score more than one goal on 5 opportunities, but whatever, 20% is 20%. It is what it is. San Jose exiting that game had the best power play unit in the league. Entering it, they were second best. So as of Sunday morning, they were the top PK in the league. So for the Avalanche to even get one on them, and for that goal to be the turning point goal, you take that any day of the week.
Yeah.
You had a power play goal and you even scored shorthanded. You take that special teams as a victory any day.
Yeah, and with JT Compher going down, we saw Nazem Kadri kind of get bumped it back into the first power play unit, which I thought was refreshing to see. I know you don't want to take too many of the weapons off the PP2, but I think he just blends well with that unit.
I'm all for it. I think as Alex Newhook continues to have the season he's having, you slot him at center on the second unit with Nichushkin and Burakovsky, with Taves and Girard at the point, and you stack that top power play unit with McKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog, Kadri, and Makar. That was the unit that in the bubble was just, you know, playing excellent, and that's the unit you want to see. And it's good that Newhook is not only a centerman, but is a centerman that they're playing at center as a rookie, because that means he can slot in between Berkey and Val and just have two excellent units, you know, obviously when everybody is healthy, which God knows when that's going to happen.
Not to mention the way Naz has been buzzing too, right? I mean, he deserves a shot up there.
Jared Bednar said after the game yesterday on Saturday that the last two games are the two best games he's ever seen Nazem play. And what Kadri has done over the last week and a half, and I know it's kind of a what have you done for me lately, and it's kind of jumping to conclusions after 5 or 6 or 7 games, but I'm going to say it's the entire season. He's earned another contract with this team. I don't know how much money he wants. I don't know if he's going to try to cash out big time, but he is, you know, getting into the 30s now. Well, he is in his 30s now. So if you're the Avalanche and you can lock up Kadri for, you know, it's the same thing I'm going to say about Darcy Kemper, considering, you know, assuming Kemper has the season that he could have, that he's been having and just getting better and doesn't get injured. Kadri as your 2C and Kemper as your starting goalie, you want to lock him up for deals between 2 and 4 years, preferably 3 for Kadri, maybe 4 for Kemper, where they're just kind of stopgaps. Those are not your long-term options, but they're going to be there for the next 2 or 3 or 4 years and, you know, be part of that core that's going to lead you hopefully to a Stanley Cup or 2 or 3 of them. Who knows? But Kadri is proving that he's still got it. And what he had last season was just, you know, a blip in the radar.
Right. I mean, a lot of the offense falls on his shoulders. But hey, 13 goals in 2 games isn't bad. And I hope a lot of people out there were taking the puck lines on both those, because those were very foreseeable puck lines. And if you're not taking puck lines and have no idea what I'm talking about, that means you probably need to download DraftKings now. And if you're a football fan who's ready to score some free bets, now you can win when you bet on any NFL game this week with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers who bet just $1 on either team to score can win $100 in free bets. When a team scores, you score. DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also get skin in the game with new same-game parlays, where you combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, and best of all, you can deposit or withdraw your cash whenever you want. Hopefully doing a little bit more withdrawing than depositing. But download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code MHS. Bet $1 on either team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code MHS this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL.
Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. JJ, let's talk about that parlay we put together yesterday during the pregame. I believe you came in, you sat down at your seat, you looked at the time on your watch and it was like 6:25 p.m. and you went, man, I got here way too early. So to pass the time, we decided to put together a parlay. And let's talk about that a little bit. Tell me what the legs on that parlay was.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was kind of foreseeable. We knew, and if you listen to our live version of the show, we called that this game was going to go exactly the way it did. So I wanted to start with that, right? We wanted to start with the puck line. But man, I just love parlays, and I really don't get excited unless I'm at least a plus 300 or so. So we had to get something to juice those odds up a little bit. So what'd we do? We said, oh, well, Minnesota's playing Arizona. Was it Arizona? No, it was Seattle. Minnesota, Seattle. Yeah. And so that should be an easy one there. So we threw Minnesota in it. And then, of course, I threw in the Clippers to beat the Minnesota Timberwolves, because that was at minus 200. LA's at home. NBA at home when you're favorite. It's tough to lose those games. So I just sprinkled that on top to help my odds. And boom, baby, we hit it together. And then we high-fived and we maybe even hugged after the game, Arif.
Yeah, it was a lot of money. We put a lot on that. Well, I mean, not me, but you put a lot on that and won a lot from it. So it was exciting to see it come through. And especially considering the Avalanche let in the first goal and the first 8 shots, and you're 10 minutes in the game and you're like, wait, so they have to outscore this team by 3 goals the rest of the way? Well, they beat them 6-2. So it worked and it was a heck of a play. So you only get those. I mean, you can't only get those on DraftKings, but on DraftKings, it is so easy to put in those bets. So if you ever get to the game early and you're sitting there thinking, man, I need to pass the time until the game starts, put some money on the Avalanche puck line, sprinkle it in with a couple of sure things around the NHL, around the NBA. Hell, you could have even thrown some FIFA World Cup qualifiers in there. France destroyed Kazakhstan, 8-0. That could have been, you know, it was probably like minus 500 odds, but that could have bumped it up a good $50. So just create those parlays and cash out, baby, and use DraftKings and use that promo code.
Exactly. I think something that nobody had on their bet sheet was the Avalanche acquiring from the waiver wire Nicholas Obe-Kubel. That was a kind of a pickup out of nowhere, and we kind of talked about how strange it was that they didn't go after a guy like Blake Como, but it sounds like they really fell in love with Obe-Kubel.
Yeah, so Obe-Kubel, obviously, was really cool to be able to break that live on the radio show yesterday. There really isn't much to say about him because we didn't know what he was really going to do or what he was really going to bring just based off of his stats line. But apparently the first sign that I got that this was a good pickup was Frank Saravalli. When he broke the news that the Avalanche claimed him on waivers, he said a lot of teams were poking around for this guy. So it wasn't just one team putting in a claim. The Avalanche are kind of middle of the pack, 17th best team. So 16 of those teams that were ahead of the Avalanche, some of them had to have put in a claim for him too. And obviously the Avs came away with it because they were lower on the food chain. So that's number one. Number two, he's 25 years old. He's younger. This isn't like a Blake Como type of deal. This is more like a Matt Nieto when the Avalanche picked him up, or Patrick Nemeth when they picked him up. It's a player that just needs a new environment to maybe reinvigorate his career, get a better opportunity, and go up from there. Number three, asking Jared Bednar about him yesterday. You were in that press conference. We just talked about how he gave long answers to every single question he got. And when I asked him about Nicholas Aubé-Cobel, this is what he said. He said, I talked to Joe in depth the other day about him. Our scouts like him. Joe likes him. C-Mac likes him. C-Mac being Chris McFarland, the assistant GM. He said, so I went through all the shifts from this year and watched them. And yeah, we're excited about it and we like him. He's a right-handed shot, hard worker, and he has a good skill set. Great shot, but he's played in a minimal role this year in Philadelphia. They have a deep forward group. And we have a group that's, you know, kind of getting a little bit thinner by the day. He's a guy that can come in and help us. The right shot is nice. His work ethic is good. His details are pretty good. So already right now I'm getting Logan O'Connor vibes. He's a guy that was a fourth liner in Philly, but I think he's a guy that can move up and down the lineup here and help other lines as well. We'll see how he does. We'll have a good meeting with him when he gets in and bring him up to speed. And by the looks of the injury to Confer, that means that he can be jumping into the lineup right away and hopefully help us. Hell of a lot of good things to say about him. I didn't know which way it was going to go. When I asked Jared about him, you know, and this was Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, and the Avalanche had claimed him Saturday afternoon. I didn't know if Bednar had much to say about him by then, but no, apparently he watched all 110 minutes that Aubé-Cobel played this season. He is prepping. The dude is just on his game as a coach. This is what he gets paid to do, and he does a damn good job at it. I mean, where do you have the time to sit down and watch 2 hours of shifts for a fourth liner on another team?
Well, I'm sure it was trimmed down to it for him a little bit, condensed, and thrown all onto one file. But still, he had to sit down and watch a lot of hockey and really pay attention.
And I mean, I'm assuming he started watching those shifts after the Avalanche claimed him and not before, because you're not going to sit there and be like, I'm going to watch 2 hours worth of shifts for this guy. And then
that we might not get. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That we might not get. But apparently, he had to have done that on a game day while you're prepping for a game, knowing that Bowen Byram's out and just trying to figure out your line combination. So a lot of good things about Nicholas Aubé-Cobel. A lot of you are probably going to be listening to this Monday. We will see if he'll be at practice. I assume he will be at Family Sports Monday, especially with that Confer injury. So shout out to the Avalanche for kind of scouting this guy. We were looking at somebody like a Blake Coleman. We were talking about him privately amongst ourselves when he was put on waivers. But to see him go out and pick up a 25-year-old like that, it just might be another diamond in the rough like Matt Nieto and Patrick Nemeth that ended up becoming, you know, sure thing NHLers and permanent NHLers after the Avs picked him up on waivers.
It stood out to me when Jared Bednar said the right-handed shot. He brought that up twice, right? So obviously that's something that they really value. And I was like, why is that such a big deal to him? Well, this is why. Because the other right-handed forwards are JT Compher, out. Martin Kaut, out. Nathan MacKinnon, out. Jason Megna, who's a depth player, right? And then Logan O'Connor, and then Kiefer Sherwood. So, you know, you're really kind of short on righties right now, not only at just in the lineup in general, but at the top of the lineup even.
Yeah, Mikko Rantanen plays the right wing, but he's a left shot right wing. Burakovsky's the same thing, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. So those are left shooting right wingers. The Confer injury especially. I mean, the reason why Kadri wasn't on the top power play unit in the beginning of the year is because Bednar said, I want a right shot there. But now he's kind of, his hands are tied. He's got no choice. It's either keeping a right shot and putting Logan O'Connor or even Jason Megna there, or it's like, you know what? Screw it. Let's put Kadri there. He's a good player. He can score on the backhand for all I care. So, Nicholas Aubé-Cobel seems like the Avalanche. We're touting this guy for a while, and I'm just really excited to see what he can bring. So we'll learn more about him Monday, and maybe he'll talk to the media too. I assume he will if he's there.
Yeah. So let's go back in time a little bit and get into the 7-1 win against Vancouver. Let's break that down a little bit heavier here. It was kind of right before that game that we learned, I mean, not immediately before, but leading up to that game that we learned that Nathan MacKinnon was going to be out for about 3 weeks and that Confer would be jumping into the first center spot. So, I mean, obviously sucks to hear about Nathan MacKinnon, but we know that, you know, offensively, it stings the most, but in terms of record-wise, it's not so bad.
No, I think I said this yesterday on the live radio show that going into December, so 3 weeks from the day that the McKinnon three-week injury was announced, obviously Bednar said give or take 3 weeks, so it could be more, it could be less, but 3 weeks exactly to that day is going to be December 1st in Toronto, meaning that Nathan McKinnon is going to go through until December with just one goal on the season. So whatever the Avalanche's record is, come December 1st, just remember that the Avalanche's record on December 1st is going to be what it is, good or bad, with Nathan McKinnon only having one goal. So if it's good, that's a good thing, because now you're going to bring in a guy who's going to score 6 or 7 goals a month and be one of the better players in the NHL to a team that already has a great record. But if it's more of a shaky record, you have to remember that their top line center has one goal in the first 2 months of the year. So that's kind of the gist that I got from that. But JT Compher, I love the fact that the Avalanche put him in that position because number one, he's earned it. He's had a hell of a season, and that's no disrespect to Nazem Kadri. Kadri's playing on that second line with Berkey and Nichushkin, and those are the guys that he's, you know, expected to play with all year. You want them to develop that chemistry. And, you know, we're going to have to talk a little bit about Val Nichushkin because he's been back for 2 games now and he's been excellent. But I love the fact that JT was put into that spot. It just sucks to talk about it now knowing that he's probably going to be out.
Yeah, I mean, let's get into Nichushkin. The way he's been playing, he kind of feels like he's the heart and soul of this team, right? I mean, he gets back in the lineup, and then suddenly everything seems right in the world. Everybody's playing the right way, and it kind of all stems from the way he's playing. He kind of seems to lead by example here. So, yeah, Nichushkin, we didn't know he'd be so pivotal.
You know what it is?
But he is.
Val spent the entire summer listening to Hockey Mountain High and listening to us sitting there talking about how they got to go get this guy and that guy and Tatar and make a trade. And then he heard me say, go trade Gerard for Alex Tuck. And he said, what the f-? I'm here. I'm your second line. I'm just kidding. But like, he's the second line left winger that we didn't know this team was going to have. And we talked about it all summer. And then obviously during training camp, we learned Val was going to get that first crack. He plays opening night. He puts up an assist and then he disappears for 9 games with an injury, comes back, plays 2 more games, scores the first goal of that 7-1 game, and then has an assist yesterday in the game on Saturday. But he scores that excellent power play goal, and he bursts in excitement. Obviously, he went into the net after the puck, but it was a hell of a play by Newhook and Kadri and him. And yeah, he's kind of really given the Avalanche the stability, similar to Devon Taves on defense, where as soon as Devon Taves was put into that blue line, everybody kind of slotted accordingly into where they belong. As soon as you brought Nichushkin back into that second line left wing spot where we saw players like Logan O'Connor play and players like JT Compher switch to the wing when you'd rather him be a center. As soon as you brought him back to be the second line left winger, everything else made sense. Obviously bringing up Newhook helps with that as well because he's been here for 2 games. But man, Val, like Kemper and like Kadri, that's a guy that's proving he needs to be re-signed as well. So, you know, I don't know how the hell Joe Sakic's going to make all this work because obviously the other UFA is also Burakovsky, but man, he's been everything and more for the Avalanche. And if he has this kind of season all year, he's going to put up 40, 50 points. And that's with the fact that he's still one of the better defensive players in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's scoring goals is everything, right? I mean, you think about the transformation of Val Nichushkin, and we've always known he's been a pretty good player defensively, and he just seemed so snake-bitten for so long. And I remember not even a year ago, right, saying, when the hell is Val Nichushkin going to get going? I'm still waiting for Val Nichushkin 2 seasons later. Well, now he kind of found a knack for scoring. He's gotten comfortable. And now he just seems like that all-around player that so many teams covet. When before, you know, it almost seemed like he was making his way back to the KHL when he left Dallas. So, I love the transformation. That's the biggest thing for me from Val Nichushkin. I mean, he always had it in him. It just took a while to really reach his full potential. And now he seems to be, you know, again, one of the most important players on this team.
Yeah, and it's hard to kind of put it into perspective because the Avalanche obviously signed him as a UFA, but it was a unique case because he was a really young guy that the Dallas Stars bought out after he came back from Russia for a year, where you kind of forget that he's still 26 years old. Like he was drafted the same year as Nathan McKinnon. He's only 6 years older than McKinnon. So when you sit there and think about someone like Nazem Kadri, you say, yeah, we want to sign him as a stopgap second line center. When you look at Valerie Nichushkin, who's going to be 27 this summer, if you re-sign him, you can give him a longer deal knowing that he's still in the prime of his career and probably playing the best hockey of his career. So it did take him a little bit of a while. He was a top 10 pick that year. He was exactly the 10th pick that year for the Dallas Stars. And he's finally coming into his own. His game is very well-rounded. He's obviously going to play in the Olympics if he stays healthy then. And shout out to Val Nichushkin.
You accidentally said that he's 6 years older than McKinnon. How much older is he actually?
6 months, my bad. Did I say years? Oh. Thank you for catching that, because I would have hated myself if I listened to that tomorrow. But like, God damn it. Yeah, no, he's 6 months older than McKinnon. He's born in March and McKinnon's in September.
Got it. I think the power play continued to show promise. I guess it started, since we are going backwards in time, but scoring twice against Vancouver. That was the first time they had scored twice all season long, so that was huge. But at the same time, Vancouver just seems to be kind of a dumpster fire. So the Avs took care of business there. I don't think they really exceeded expectations. I think they had to blow out a team like Vancouver because they're just in the pits.
Yeah.
I heard I was listening on my way home from the Avs game. I was listening to the end of the Vancouver Golden Knights game, and that's on the radio, right? So on that broadcast, they were kind of talking how that on this road trip, the owners of the Vancouver Canucks are traveling with the team, and they're watching the Canucks get blown out by the Avalanche. They're watching the Canucks blow a lead to the Knights, and now the Canucks are getting kind of tossed around by the Anaheim Ducks, and up next is the Avalanche for them 3-1. Too. So, it kind of seems like they're on a path directly to get their coach fired, and Vancouver just not playing the way they need to be at all.
Yeah, and right now they are in Anaheim, but if Colorado goes into Vancouver for that next game and puts up another 5 or 6 or 7 goals and really embarrasses the Canucks, I bet you anything that's Travis Green's last game.
Yep.
That's the kind of thing that it could do. The last time they played that game, the 7-1 game, it's crazy. It's funny to say, since you mentioned the power play, Vancouver going into that game has the worst penalty kill in the NHL, and now San Jose has the best. So they went from playing the worst PK to the best PK. They scored 3 goals in those 2 games and a couple of shorthanded goals. So great special teams all around these last 2 games. But you know what, man? You have to play the schedule ahead of you, and that's what the Avalanche are doing. I mean, you know, when they were going through all their injury issues, they were playing really good teams. They played the Blues twice. They had to play Florida, Tampa, and Washington, which are all having great seasons. They had to play the Vegas Golden Knights in a game that they lost. Columbus for 2 games that are, you know, you want to at least win one of those, but that's a team that's playing well so far. But then you looked at the schedule, starting with that Vancouver game, and it was Vancouver, then it was San Jose, then it's Vancouver again, then it's Seattle, then it's Ottawa, then it's the Ducks that are kind of on a good streak right now, then it's the lowly Dallas Stars, and then it's the Predators that are kind of on a good streak. So if the Ducks and the Predators, 2 teams that are not expected to make a lot of noise but are on winning streaks, are going to be your toughest competition over a 7 or 8 game stretch, you got to rack up some wins and rack up some points. And the Avalanche saw that, and they said, we need to take advantage of this. So, you know, they didn't get to play the Arizona Coyotes yet. That's someone they get to play 3 or 4 times. But now they get to play the Vancouver Canucks again at a time when the Canucks are reeling, and they have an opportunity here against Vancouver to, you know, win their 3rd straight game and, you know,
kick them while they're down.
Exactly. Build up a little bit of a win streak. And to be honest with you, I think they can win this game with Jonas Johansson in net.
Well, pump the brakes. We'll look ahead here in a second. But great teams are coach killers, right? You want to go in there and be that team that gets a coach fired. I think that's a great sign for the direction of where the Avalanche are going. So, while it was a great game from the Avalanche, not exactly the toughest competition, but taking care of business, I think that's what the main point I'm trying to hammer home here. But
boom, there's an empty netter for Adam Henrique. Yeah. So they're down 4-1 now to Anaheim. They're going to lose 3 games in a row where they let in 7 goals to the Avs, 7 to Vegas, and 4 so far to Anaheim. Maybe they let in another one, but that's a lot of goals. That's 18 goals against in 3 games.
And then in that game, we saw another shorthanded goal, the first of 2. Of course, we saw one in against San Jose and one against Vancouver. And again, that's that Helman O'Connor magic, right?
Yep. Helman O'Connor, 2 goals, 2 games. One of them was Helm to O'Connor. The other one was O'Connor to Helm. The last time the Avalanche scored a shorthanded goal 2 games in a row was in December of 2019. So it was before COVID a few months. So their PK is starting to get back up and running. Obviously, they've lost a lot of guys like Calvert and Nieto and Soderberg off their PK unit recently, in recent years. But adding someone like Darren Helm, and obviously the development and production you're seeing from Logan O'Connor helps there too.
And a fifth goal just goes in on the Vancouver Canucks. That is embarrassing.
That came, what, 11 seconds later?
Yeah, 30 seconds.
Holy crap.
Left in the game. They put their goalie back in the net and it still went in. But yeah, anyway, yeah. Moving on. Rantanen scores two goals, but we already kind of touched on that stuff. I think the real notable thing that happened in the game against Vancouver was losing Bowen Byram. And it was so weird how it happened, right? Because we thought he might be okay after skating the next day. And that was, it was kind of played off too after the game against Vancouver, where the press conference, Jared Bednar, just kind of like, I don't know how he is. We're going to see how he's doing. So the fact that it wasn't immediately like, yes, he's concussed, yeah, he's out, I thought, you know, was maybe a good sign. But 2 days later, I guess he woke up not feeling great. And
yeah,
back to square one with Bowen Byram here.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because you kind of like, it was refreshing on Friday. You know, I wasn't at practice, but a couple of the other reporters were there, and to see them just show up and say, Bo Byram's here in a regular sweater, playing, taking regular shifts on that D pair with Sam Girard was nice to see. And we expected the same thing going into Saturday, and Jared Bednar came out and said he woke up just feeling not great, so he's not in. So, you know, it's going to be a day-by-day thing with him. The Avalanche don't play till Wednesday, so if he's not there Monday, hopefully he is Tuesday. If he's not there Tuesday, hopefully he's traveling, because if he's traveling, that means that they have a hope that he's going to play in one or two of those games against Seattle and Vancouver. So we'll see. Hopefully this concussion thing doesn't stretch, because obviously we know concussions are kind of you can't predict what's going to happen. It's not a 2 to 4 week timeline or 3 to 6 weeks or whatever it is to, you know, heal a bone. It's a whole different ballgame where you just got to take it one day at a time.
Yep. Hoping for the best there.
Yeah. I was going to mention Tucker Pullman, who was suspended for 2 games for that hit on Kiefer Sherwood. He obviously missed a Vegas game, and he's not playing this game right now that they just lost against Anaheim. So he's going to be back for that game against the Avalanche. So, that's going to be fun to see, because I think Kiefer or somebody on the fourth line might want to go back against him. It was a very weird hit. He kind of turned around and just like was very stupid and frustrated and kind of clocked him in the head with his glove and his stick. So maybe somebody drops the gloves with him. We'll see.
You better watch out. Kadri's coming after him, the leader in fights on this team, right? So now I take a second to tell you guys about Total Beverage. Guys, everybody already knows Total Beverage in Westminster and Thornton, right? Sure, Total Beverage has an incredible selection of beer, wine, and spirits, but did you know that they also deliver? That's so clutch. Did you know that they have curbside pickup available? You don't even have to go inside. You just swing by, pick it up, and you're gone. And did you know that they do online wine education classes? I love that. Why not refine yourself and, you know, learn the finer things of wine? If you didn't know those things, it's time to get to know Total Beverage again. Stop by 104th in Thornton or on Sheridan in Westminster and see for yourself. Or you can always find weekly deals, events, and even drink recipes online at totalbeverage.com. Total Beverage, everything you need and more. All right, Arif, now it's time. We can look ahead. Look at the schedule that lies ahead.
You know, I like to jump around a little bit.
For the third week in a row, however, the Avalanche are playing 2 games in a 7-day span. Just the rest continues. But this is probably the last stretch here where they really have a long break. So it's going Vancouver, then Seattle, and really you're getting into the swing of a pretty hefty schedule here.
Yeah, then you're going to go 22nd, 24th, 26th, 27th. So that's going to be 3 or 4 games in 6 nights. And then you have another bit of a break there, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And then they go into Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa, 3 games in 4 days as well. And then obviously Philly and Rangers. Oh, man, it's going to get pretty busy here. 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 23. Their next big break after the 27th is not going to be until Christmas. So they're going to go on a month stretch where they're playing every other night and back-to-backs in there as well. So I kind of like the fact that they're getting this again, because guys like Compher and Bowen Byram are going to have a little bit of a chance to get healthy here. We'll see what the deal is with Compher. Bo, we know, is kind of a day-to-day thing. The other guy is Nicholas Aubé-Cobel, is going to have a little bit of time to get acclimated with his new team. And it's also going to be good because Darcy Kemper's, you know, played a lot of games already, but he's had a lot of time to kind of rest. Going into December, going into that stretch that starts December 1st after the 27th game, you're going to need, hopefully, a healthy Pavel Francouz or another goalie by then, because you don't want to have to play Kemper that much and you don't want to put Johansson into too many games.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with it. Things are kind of slowing down. I think we're a little bit more comfortable with where this team is at as a whole, right? So I think I'm not so paranoid about throwing Johansson in. Do I feel strongly about, you know, if the team's going to win? I don't know. I might take whoever that is at the +1.5 that night if it is against Vancouver, because, you know, I'm just still not too confident. But, man, we just talked about how terrible Vancouver is. Maybe not. But, yeah, I think you're fine throwing Johansson in.
I'm 100% sure that the Avalanche, you know, this is without confirming anything. We'll find out Monday, but I'm like 100% positive in my opinion that the Avalanche are going to play Johansson against Vancouver, since they're not playing too well, and then turn around against Seattle, who, by the way, Seattle also is not playing too well, but against Seattle, you can go Kemper versus Grubauer. So that's, in my opinion, is what's going to happen. It's going to give Kemper a little bit of time off because he played Saturday and then he won't play again until Friday, November 19th, and he'll play that game. And then the Avalanche have Saturday and Sunday off before they play the Ottawa Senators. So it'll be nice for Kemper to get in a game on the 13th. And between the 13th and the 21st, he only plays one more game. So you want to give Johansson that game against Vancouver, and then you want to let Kemper go head-to-head with Grubauer.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to ask this question of Darcy Kemper last night, but it was kind of chaotic because he was up there with Newhook and a million people were trying to ask questions. But you got to really feel, now that he's acclimated and now that he's comfortable with this team, it really seems that the workload that he's getting just has to be such a relief, right? I mean, he faced 52 shots, I think it was, in those two games. That's a one game for him in Arizona. So this rest has to be fantastic for him.
Especially against the Avs.
Yeah. Early on in the season, rest. Just keep that rest going and try to give Johansson a few games here and there and keep the workload on Darcy Kemper in-game minimal, and I think you're going to be perfect. Because I think you hit it on the head last night when we were in the press box, Arif, and you said, okay, if JT Confer goes down, it's whatever. If Tyson Jost goes down, it's whatever. The one guy that cannot go down is Darcy Kemper, because if he does, this whole thing's blown to hell, and I think that's spot on. Yeah. So give this guy his rest. He seems rested. He seems comfortable. You love everything you're seeing from Darcy Kemper right now.
He's 5-2 in his last 7 games, and the only two losses are, number one, that game against Columbus that the Avalanche completely left him out to dry, and then it was the loss against the Vegas Golden Knights, the 3-1 loss that also the Avalanche, you know, kind of didn't really have that good of a game, and the third goal was an empty netter, so he only let in 2 goals. So he is on it. He's got nearly a .930 save percentage in those 7 games. But, you know, what you just said is exactly true. And I kind of want to ask you a question. On Friday, Jared Bednar was asked about Pavel Francouz, and he said that the doctor recommended he doesn't skate right now. No updates on him, nothing, you know, week to week could mean God knows what. I'm not saying Pavel Francouz's career is over. I'm not saying you can't rely on him or he's not going to come back and play a lot of games. But when do you look at that and say it's time to bring in another backup goalie? Because in my opinion, really quickly, when the Avalanche had all those injury issues last year, they brought in Jonas Johansson, knowing that Jonas Johansson is more of a third string guy to replace Miska as the third string guy. And then when they brought in Devan Dubnyk, that was a stopgap of a backup goalie to bring in just for the rest of the season. Going into the summer, they felt, you know, Pavel's going to be back. He's going to be healthy. And we're going to have the old Frankie back with no matter who our starter is. And it didn't end up being Grubauer. It ended up being Kemper. But there was a lot of options on the table. Somebody like Dan Vladar, or Vladosh, however you pronounce his name. He's in Calgary now. He had a shutout today. That was a guy that Boston was offloading for pretty much nothing. You know, the Avalanche didn't go out and bring in somebody like that, a young goalie like that. They didn't try to go out and bring in another backup because in their mind, Frankie was going to be ready. When is it time to pull the plug on that and say that they need another backup goalie? Because from what I just saw in that December schedule, you're either going to play Johansson 4 or 5 times, or you're going to play the hell out of Kemper, and either way, it's not a good look.
Yeah, it really stinks to hear that update from Francouz. And I mean, he got so lucky signing his extension when he did, right? Because it was, 6-7 games after his extension that we basically haven't seen him since then. So I'm going to give you a hard date here, Arif, March 21st. I'm sure you can imagine why I'm giving you that date. That's the trade deadline. So if you if you get to that point and he's still kind of giving you these problems, he's still inconsistent, he's still not giving you the confidence that he can be there when you need him the most, then I think it's absolutely time. And it stings because he's great.
Okay,
it's tough
but
to upgrade from
him. No. Let me. I got to stop you for a sec. Between now and March 21st, you're going to ride with Kemper and Johansson and play Kemper 10 out of every 12 games?
I think you're safe doing so. I'm fine with that.
Well, that means by March 21st, a month before the season ends, Kemper's already going to be at 60 games, looking at playing 70 games. Goalies in the NHL don't play 70 games anymore. You don't see that anymore. You likely want your starter to be around 56 to 62 games. That leaves 20 games or 22 games for another goalie. We're 12 games in. Johansson's played 2. Are you playing Johansson 12 more times?
Yeah, that trade deadline's a lot later than I realized, I guess.
Yeah, no, the target date is mid-December. It's in a month. Like halfway through that stretch, let's go back to that December schedule. You got Toronto on the 1st, which, by the way, I don't know if I've announced this publicly yet or on the podcast yet, but I will be in Toronto for that game. I'm super excited. It's going to be my first road game since March 2nd, 2020. A week and a half before the world kind of shut down and went to hell. So I will be at that game in Toronto, but you got Toronto on the 1st and then you got the Montreal Canadiens who've been struggling on the 2nd. You know damn well that Kemper's not playing a back-to-back. Bednar doesn't do that. So on the 2nd, you're going to see Johansson. Then you got the Sens, the Flyers, and the Rangers, and the Red Wings on the 4th, the 6th, the 8th, and the 10th. You're likely going to play Johansson against the Red Wings because on the 12th and 14th and the 16th, you got the Panthers, the Rangers, and the Predators. You get the point. Then you got the Lightning. Then you got the Red Wings again. You get the point. The point is, once you get into that stretch in December, you're going to have to start picking and choosing which games you're putting in Johansson, but you don't want to lose those games. And no disrespect to Johansson. He does his job when he's in net, but you need somebody who could be a little bit more of a backup goalie to Kemper that can play 3 or 4 out of 10 game stretches when you need him to.
All right,
You don't want Kemper getting up to 65-70.
I'm changing my answer to January 1st. Final answer. Regis.
Let's go with that. Yeah. Get through that December stretch because you got the Red Wings twice. You got the Canadiens. You got the Senators. You got games in there where you can play Jonas Johansson and, you know, and kind of hope and pray that you get a few wins and Johansson goes 3-3 or 3-2 or 2-2, whatever the hell it is out of how many games he plays. But after that, you need somebody else, especially if Kemper ends up going to the Olympics and starting games for Canada. You can't come back out of that and be like, all right, Darcy, back to playing 7 out of every 8 games.
After he pulls his groin. No, but best case scenario is definitely Pavel Francouz being 100% or at least 90% by January 1st, right? I mean, I think that's the scenario we're all rooting for. Yeah. You'd rather not bring in a new goalie, especially because, like I said, it's hard to find a better replacement than Francouz. Francouz is great.
He's such a friggin' good goalie, dude. We were looking at stats yesterday. Remember how we were looking at those numbers and Pavel's a top 5 or 6 goalie in save percentage, you know, in the 19 and 20 seasons. He's such an underrated piece. And the fact that the injury that he had this time around, the sprained ankle, had nothing to do with the double hip replacement surgery says everything you need to know about that guy and his luck. So hopefully he gets healthy here and hopefully he comes back. You know, he's going to have a game or two that are probably not his best because he hasn't played hockey in nearly 2 years, year and a half or so. But if you can get him to the point where by the time you get to January, you have Pavel Francouz there where in a 6-game stretch, you can go 3-3 and just kind of give Kemper a few days off, it would be really nice.
Yeah, I think a Pavel Francouz who's not quite at full force is still better than a Johansson at full force.
Yeah, and again, Johansson is probably one of the better third-string goalies the Avs have had in a while compared to Hunter Miska, compared to Michael Hutchinson and guys like that. So he does what he needs to do, and he does a good job at it, and that's be the third-string goalie. But to be the backup is just not something you want out of Johansson.
Right on. So 2 road games this week to look ahead to, like we said, Vancouver and Seattle, and we'll see how those go. But, you know, from here, we kind of got to wrap up the show the way we always do, Arif, unless you have any final thoughts you want to get out there before we do.
That's about it for me. I think I just kind of like unloaded everything that was left in my brain with that conversation there on Johansson and Frankie. So let's close the show the way we always do.
Yep, it's late Sunday night here, so let's wrap it up the way we know how. And that's with the Mile High Sports 3 Stars of the Week presented by DraftKings Sportsbook and Total Beverage. Star number 3, we got to give it to Alex Newhook. Not only because he scored his first regular season NHL game, but I just thought since his call-up, those first two games he played, since that first shift he hit the ice, he just looked like a different player. He was tenacious. He was fast. He was just playing like the guy that we expected and just using all of his skill set and making it work. So I loved what I saw from Alex Newhook, and I really think he was a catalyst for the way the Avs came out against Vancouver.
Remember that video when he got drafted of him kind of like smiling and just happy and then runs into that group of all his friends that are
his
like...
His rowdy friends.
Yeah, and he just has that...
Newfies, right?
Yeah, that smile on his face. Did you not get the same vibes of him like that yesterday in the media room? Just a happy-go-lucky kid just sitting up there with Darcy Kemper. And Kemper is a, you know, a very charming-looking dude, but more of like a straight face. And Newhook's just sitting there just happy to be there. He was just a happy guy, and it's great to see that. He scored a nice goal. It was a beautiful assist by Girard. And yeah, shout-out to Alex Newhook, his first regular season goal because he did score in the playoffs, but the first of many for the Avs.
Yeah, it's got to be a good feeling to not only get the call back to the NHL, right, but then contribute to your team's win so much so that they want you to be in the press conference. So that's got to be a good giddy feeling for a rookie for sure. Star number 2, we're going to Nazem Kadri. Man, he's just been collecting stars left and right this season, but how can you deny him with the way he's been playing, just adding points to the board and scoring goals and just taking the offensive pressure on his shoulders and succeeding with it, thriving, flourishing.
Ed, let me ask you a question. In his first 107 regular season games, which is the 1920 and the 2021 seasons, he had 68 points. Do you think he passes that number this season alone?
Yeah, I mean, barring any injuries, that can always happen, right? So...
The thing is, he was the only guy that played all 56 games last year. Obviously, he missed 8 in the playoffs because of the suspension. He was the only guy that played all 56 regular season games. In 20, he did have a few injuries, but he played 51 of, I believe, 59 games or 60 games. So he seems to be, you know, doing a good job of staying healthy. He's played 82 before and 80 before, so I think he does it. I think he's going to hit 68 points in this season alone and, you know, hell of a number to reach in your career, in your contract year because, you know, he's going to get paid pretty damn well if he can do that.
Yep. Hopefully doesn't make himself too unaffordable from the Avalanche perspective because I've said it once, I'll say it again. I think he's a guy that should stick around. I love what he brings.
100%.
Star number 1, we really pumped his tires early in the show, but he deserves it. He got the star last night. He's getting the star from us. That's Sam Girard for really having a hell of a game. A very impressive offensive game and just looking like himself. Again, I saw the Tornado come back out and it's just good to see. It still wasn't at full speed. It wasn't a full force like he's used to just juking people out, but it still got him out of the pickle that he was in and allowed him to keep the play alive in the offensive zone. So Sam Girard playing great. Keep it up. Shout out to you.
Absolutely. And it's kind of hilarious. You know, we were talking about it that it's funny to me that he's got 9 points in 10 games because you look at the season as a whole, and when you think of Sam Girard's season as a whole, it's he hasn't had the best start. He's kind of been hit a couple times. He's been lit up a couple times, injured. Granted, he's only missed 2 games. It feels like more. And despite all of that, all it took was for him to have 2 strong games to be like, yeah, I got 9 points in 10 games. So what? Yeah, you know, I'll put up 9 every 10 games, even if they're a bad 10 games. Like if that's a bad 10 games and he had 9 points, what's going to be a good 10 games for him? Hell of a dude. Like, shout out to Sam Girard. He deserves that first star. And, you know, it's crazy to think that Sam Girard is this good and he's like the 4th most notable name on the Avs blue line, which again speaks volumes to just how loaded that depth is on the blue line.
Yeah, I mean, definitely raising his value. I know you were saying to ship him out of town last week. So definitely get a good return for him at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that being said, it's a perfect time for us to wrap up the show. We're hitting an hour by my clock, maybe a little less with all the editing that Patrick has to do. And
Don't tell the
I forgot.
Audience.
That's a secret. Sorry.
It's all natural. We don't got to edit anything ever.
I mean, if you listen to our live radio show, you might see how some editing is probably necessary, but you know, we don't want to sound like idiots out here. So thanks to all you guys for listening to us. And of course, thanks to Patrick for making us sound beautiful each and every episode.
Yeah. I feel like one day Patrick's just going to release a blooper reel of all the crap he's had to cut out just like without even telling us, and I'm just going to go online and be like, oh no.
Oh no.
I've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, so thanks for hanging out with us. We're here on a Sunday night, so it's probably your Monday morning. So have a good start to your week, and let's see what the Avs do this weekend. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your heart. Hockey's for everyone, and we out you.